enlightenment. This product. West Coast Boys Pod.
Known as the playground of the stars.
Welcome back to the Best Coast Boys podcast, and we are back. Sorry about the second pod last week. Somebody on this podcast
was getting a summer body.
Ended up having
getting a summer body ready. That's what he was doing.
Somebody who's shall remain nameless had other plans, but just to get this out of the way, I am of course Landon McCool. You can find me here and on Twitter at McCoolBCB. You can also find me on the Locked On Cowboys podcast with Marcus Mosier. Check us out, and I am joined that other voice with some freshly barbecued, freshly Austinized partner, John Oning. John, say what's up to the
How's
people.
How's it going, everybody? You guys know where to find my work on Twitter at John Oning, JohnOwning, and make sure you guys are following my work at the Dallas Morning News, Sports Day DFW, sportsday.dallasnews.com. Search John Oning. I'm right there. Read all my stuff. Click on it 100 times. It's the off season, so you got to work harder on these clicks. Need you guys to put it in overdrive.
you gotta get that off season clicks yes. in, guys. Like you know, if you're gonna be
reps,
a better player,
you reps
yeah, you gotta get these clicks in. Gotta rep those clicks, guys. So today is the second half of our draft results podcast. I know the draft was like a month ago, it feels like, but we are still getting over these guys. And frankly, I think this actually kind of worked out because it gives us a little bit more time to look into some of these guys. But we're also gonna talk about. They just had the rookie mini camps. You know, there's not a lot to get out of those. It's really just teaching these guys how to be players and how to do what they have to do daily at the Cowboys facility. But we did get some interviews, and I thought the Kellen Moore interview was especially interesting and something worth talking about. So we will talk about that first, and then we will get into all the drafted and undrafted guys that the Cowboys added. So let's get right into it, shall we?
Sure.
All right, let's start with the Kellen Moore interview. Just to kind of bring it up, I was excited when I first got the chance to kind of listen to it. I mean, I think I had read part of part of a summary of what he had said, or I'd seen on Twitter someone, you know, whatever this stuff happens, the first way you see it is the guy's kind of tweeting out pertinent
nuggets,
quotes from the interviews. But the interesting thing there is that, you know, a lot of these times the reporters themselves don't even know what the nuggets are. Like that's why I always go back and watch them, is because I'm like, why did no one report on this? Like, because, you know, a lot of times it's, you know, the things that are kind of said offhand are really the more interesting thing that's happening. So let me just read a couple things that he that Kellen said, and we'll go from there. First of all, he got asked that, you know, how would he describe his offense, and beautifully he answered immediately, it's going to be a multiple offense. And basically, to kind of quote directly from it, and I'm shout out to Cowboys Wire and Katie, I'm reading off of your page. So I think the beauty of our current roster is that we have a lot of versatility. We have guys that can kind of line up in a lot of different places. Hopefully we can be multiple and present things in different ways, and at the end of the day still have our foundation and our philosophy, and you can run similar plays just out of a lot of different looks. That whole quote right there,
the Sean McVay way,
it's kind of also the Shanahan way too, like the idea of, you know, outside zone, wide zone, running these kind of foundational plays, but doing it from a ton of different looks, mm-hmm. doing it from a ton of different personnel groupings, doing it from a ton of different formations, and what that does is that it provides a lot more for the defense to have to look at and deal with without putting a lot more onto the offensive playbook plate, you know, because if you can learn the foundations of wide zone and how to run it, you know, learning it to run it from a whole bunch of different formations and with personnel groups and that sort of things, you know, and Wide Zone's just an example, but along those lines, you can, if you can do that and then learn how to run it from a whole bunch of different formations, that's a lot easier than inversely having to learn how to defend that same play against a whole bunch of different formations, where your run fits go, where, you know, where your help is, where, you know, the that sort of thing. I loved seeing this, and we'll get into a little bit more of what he said about specific players and how, and you know, kind of listing their versatility and what that tells us about it. But just, you know, and we talked about this, how excited I was when I read this. Talk to me about your thoughts on hearing this and what, you know, what this set off in your mind when you heard these words come out of Kellen Moore.
Yeah, I was excited. I think it was the most exciting revelation to come out of rookie minicamp, really, this, to see that they're going to be potentially going to be using him in the ways that we've all been kind of fantasizing about throughout the last couple of years. I just really like that it's going to, I think it's going to raise the efficiency of the offense as a whole to be able to dress up different concepts, but keep the core foundation the same, is going to allow them to play fast, and it's going to allow them to create confusion on the defense's part. We saw what the Rams offense was able to do to the Cowboys defense on the ground, and that wasn't because they were doing things that were schematically so radical. They were just doing a really fantastic job of, like we said, using formational diversity, motions, and all these different ways to set up these core concepts that can be super effective.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one of the other things, going back to what we were saying, is that he said, mentioned along this, and started talking about the actual personnel. One of the first guys he mentioned was Jermaine Olawale. And I think that that's specifically interesting and fascinating because, to me, you know, if you're looking to just line up in an I formation and bury people, I don't know that Jermaine Olawale is your fullback, right? But if you think about this, like, after they signed Kellen Moore, I'm pretty sure that Jermaine Olawale was like the first or second offensive player signed on this team. And I think, to me, that's not insignificant. I think that what that means to me, and then again, to bring it up, when they started talking about players and versatility, Mays was the first player that he brought up. And I think what that's telling me is that, you know, he comes from a Chris Peterson background. He's a coach that was a Boise State coach when he was there. He's the coach of the Washington Huskies right now. Peterson loves formational variants. He loves to formation teams to death. The other thing that he loves to do is put players in motion. He likes a lot of pre-snap motion. Mays, to me, has always been more of an H-back than a fullback. You know, more of an F than a true, you know, FB. And I think him bringing up that Mays had a lot of versatility and that they did a lot of things with him at Oakland, that was basically what Moore said. To me, that reads more like, hey, we're going to start getting some of these, you know, tight end, H-back people involved a little bit more, motioning them across formation, using Mays Olawale as a, you know, a Schrodinger's player. Like, you don't know exactly what this dude is going to do until the snap happens, because he can block, he can catch the ball, he can do a lot of different
things. Kind of like how Sean Payton and Parcells used Rodney Anderson back in the 2000s.
Exactly. Exactly. There is value in, and I think some people struggle to understand this, but there is value in not giving away what you're going to do in a given play by deploying certain personnel. I think that some teams like want to put out the personnel for certain scheme, for certain situations, and that, you know, that works for them or whatever. But I also think that there is a lot of value in putting out, and this is why people, the general public, especially Cowboys fans, they hate 13 personnel. But I'll tell you who else hates 13 personnel. Defensive coordinators hate 13 personnel. All right, because
the Eagles defensive coordinator Schwartz said he hated 13 personnel the most, right?
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, I mean, I you know, it's so hard to defend an offense when they deploy personnel that doesn't tip off what the play is going to be pre-snap. And when you have personnel out there that can do both, you know, run, pass, they can block, they can catch the ball, they can do a variety of things, you don't know what's happening until the snap comes. And I think that really allows... that gives you an advantage against the defense, and I think this is the kind of thing that Kellen Moore is hoping to tap into. So, anything else on this before we get into these draft picks in these specific players.
Yeah, one thing I was excited about is it seems like that the Cowboys' offensive playbook is going to be an open organism that they're going to be able to add to throughout the season. One quote that I really liked from Kellen Moore, too, was he said, at the same time, hopefully as this thing progresses, we can go down some other avenues just to explore and see how it fits within this system. I think it can take us to some really good places, and I like that ability to grow and to keep – it's an ever-growing organism that you keep adding to, and it keeps progressing and it keeps evolving as you go. And I think that's a key thing that you see with a lot of these offenses is they're not stagnant week to week, as they can evolve and add in new little wrinkles that make them even more efficient and even more effective.
Yeah, I think it's going to be exciting to see how this all unfurls. I think that training camp's going to be interesting. We've talked about it, but just competition-wise and because of Kellen Moore, I think the preseason's really going to be interesting as well. I think there's lots of things to look forward to. Okay, speaking of looking forward to, let's get into some of these offensive draft picks that the Cowboys selected in this latest draft. It seemed like it was more of a defensive-heavy draft, or at least like the kind of guys that...
impact players.
You know... Yeah, I mean, like the guys that are the headliners. I say, I mean, Pollard is the exception, obviously, but he was even a later pick too. So, I mean, by later pick, I mean our fourth round pick. I mean, we didn't have a first round pick, so it wasn't that late. But let's start at the top though. Connor McGovern. This was a guy that this year was the pick that the Cowboys, you know, we talked about before the draft. You know, every year it feels like there's a guy that gets picked that none of us were talking about. None of us were expecting, and none of us were even considering, right? Connor McGovern, I think, was that guy. You know, when they got to the third round and to pick 90, you know, they talk about him being the big red light going off. They had a second-round pick and a second-round grade on him. And I think it's interesting because, you know, we didn't consider, you know, why would we ever consider offensive guard, you know, interior to be on the list of, you know, any kind of bump, because they have, you know, they feel good about Frederick coming back. I don't think that's changed. You know, they got Connor Williams, obviously, and then Joe Looney had a really great season filling in for Frederick. So, you know, I think that that made us feel like that need was satiated to a certain point. So I was surprised when he got picked, but once I actually went back and watched him and got a chance to take a look at him, I really love this player.
Yeah.
You know, I think that he's got the stuff to come in and play a guard in the NFL like pretty much real soon. I think he's got some technique stuff to work out, but I think every player that's coming into the NFL is like that. But this isn't a guy that you're going to need to worry about needing to come in and get stronger or come in and like, you know, redevelop his body or anything like that. You know, he's not like quite a plug and play starter. I think if he was like a plug and play starter, he probably would have been a second round pick. But I think that, you know, it would not, if we were in dire need of that, it would not take this long to get up to speed to be ready to start in an NFL game. On the interior. I love this pick because you get a high quality guy at a lower round that, you know, obviously great value. And then clearly what it does is that it allows you to rely on your roster versatility and move Connor Williams to tackle as needed. I think that once Colombo came back into the fold, he viewed Connor Williams probably differently than Pollock did.
And
Alexander did. And I think that, you know, part. So I think that the thought process of moving Connor Williams clearly came, you know, earlier than just the
honestly, picks, honestly, I think the Amari Cooper trade really changed their opinions on it. Because if you think about it, if they didn't trade for Amari Cooper and have to have a large extension like that on the books, they would probably look to re-sign Lyle Collins at right tackle. So then you'd probably have to keep Connor Williams at guard. But the fact that they traded for Amari Cooper, have to allocate a ton of money toward him in the coming years, that makes it so it's difficult to re-sign Lyle Collins. So now you're looking to the future. You got to find a right tackle, and Connor Williams is a guy on the on the roster who already has a ton of tackle experience who they probably think can just move out there and be more effective.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's nice to have a guy on your roster that you can just kick over there. I mean, clearly has experience playing tackle. You like as a player. I think he clearly can be a tackle. The question was always about his size, you know, and about his strength. And I think that's a question at guard too. But I think from what we've seen, he may have answered that question a little bit this offseason. So, it remains to be seen exactly what Connor Williams is, you know, learning curve is going to be to move out to tackle. But I think that getting McGovern, a guy like McGovern in here is huge for that, you know, because you can get this guy going, get him ready. And then, you know, whether you want to do something with Joe Looney or not, at the very least, you're ready.
Yeah, next season. Going off that, I kind of wanted to ask you, right now, who do you think is a better player right now, McGovern or Joe Looney? As in, say, week one, Travis Frederick gets hurt something, and you have to plug one of them in. Which one would you rather plug in?
I mean, I think that there's an it's probably 50-50. Mm-hmm. Because I think that McGovern, to me, is probably going to be more physically talented.
Mm-hmm. Create more movement in the run game. Looney,
yeah, I think Looney is a guy that has a year of experience starting and you know, is still a talented player and clearly proves some things. I probably would go with McGovern just because I think, you know, by game 4 or 5, that's when
he'll be good.
That's when he'll be passing Looney and yeah, he'll need that experience to get to that level. So I would probably sacrifice him on the altar of figure it out for a few weeks just to get him up to speed, up to that level.
I think I agree for sure.
Next, they took Tony Pollard as a Memphis running back who, you know, running back in name only at this point, you know, coming into the league. I think they clearly view him as a backup running back who could do more. You know, I think he was a guy who got basically almost as many snaps, if not more, playing from the slot position than he did from the running back position because of all the talent that was in that Memphis running back field. And, you know, because they wanted to find a way to get him and Daryl Henderson on the field at the same time. So what that means is that you get a guy who is an incredibly versatile player. I mean, not just as a wide receiver where he did kind of line up all over the place and run routes, also as a running back. But, you know, and the talk has been he needs to improve, you know, his blocking.
Pass protection.
His pass protection. But I would say outside of that,
but honestly, you know, with Tony Pollard, how often are you going to be asking a guy with his skill set to sit in pass protection?
Yeah, that's a good point. And also on top of that, especially when you have Zeke, I mean, that's really where – I mean, you can definitely use Zeke and Jermaine Olawale, who I think is another guy that you may see them do that more with. Beyond that, too, I also think he can run blocks.
Yes, really, and we've talked about this a lot.
I mean, you've seen it, and I think – that means, A, that I think he can learn to pass block. So, B, I think that also provides you another layer of versatility with this player that he can come in here and, you know, you can play him with Zeke on the field and still hand Zeke the ball, and this guy can still give you some value. Yeah. It's not just a decoy. As a guy who can hit somebody, you know? So, I love this pick because I think that there's a lack of general understanding on vision of this player, but... because, you know, people are just thinking that he got drafted too high, but I think you have to have a whole picture, like the full view of what this guy is going to provide for you. This is a guy who is like, you know, they talk about four tools baseball players, you know. This is a guy who, you know, he's going to be on every special team, basically, whether it's kick or he'll cover kicks, he'll cover punts. He's going to... He can play wide receiver. He can play slot receiver. He can run routes from there. He can play running back. He can be your backup running back. He can be your jet sweep guy if Tavon's hurt, or even if Tavon's not hurt.
Return guy.
You can put him out on the field at the same time as Zeke way more easily than you could say Rod Smith, you know. And so I think that Pollard as a complete player, if he can get his learning curve in, he's going to find a way to get a ton of snaps on this offense and be a solid player, a solid role player for this team. And a guy that, even though he's a role player, he's playing several roles mm-hmm. for this team. What are your thoughts on Pollard and his
defense? Yeah, totally agree. I just basically everything that you said. I think he's underrated in his pure running back abilities. I think he has good vision in between the tackles. I think obviously he's most effective when he's bouncing outside and in space. But I don't see with most scat backs, you see them scared of contact, scared of the physicality between the tackles. But Pollard isn't scared in between the tackles at all. You see him run with power. You see him run with burst. You see him run with that forward lean. He's not afraid to take on contact. You don't see him bracing for contact.
He has no physicality mm-hmm. problems at all.
And he's a big guy. He's 210 pounds. Yeah. He's bigger than their typical scat back.
Yeah, those guys that have that are the speed players like him, the ones that are physical are the ones who are going to make it. Even Tavon Austin. If you look at Tavon Austin, like, he's tiny. But that dude's not backing down mm-hmm. from anybody. Like, I mean, those are the only ones who can make it in this league.
Yeah, totally agree. And I really like how his ability, his elusiveness, his ability to make people miss in space and in the hole. I think he wasn't tackled on first contact, 41.8% of his carries, according to Pro Football Focus, which is a really fantastic number. I think that was top five in the class. And, I love his pass-catching ability. Really good ball skills. I think his route running is a little raw at this point. His stems, his ability to beat press, his ability to create separation after the breakpoint are still a little bit raw. But his ability to contort and control his body in the air and haul in balls, he has really good ball skills. So it's a place that he can develop. And if you want to put him over there with Sanjay Law, I'm sure Sanjay Law could help him a lot with his route running. But yeah, I'm just really excited with his versatility, all the different ways he can be used. I'm really excited about the split back opportunities you can have with him and Zeke on the field, all the different types of RPOs and speed options, triple options that they could potentially use with these two talents. Just really exciting.
It really is. And yeah, I mean, again, it's kind of the whole picture. That's what's getting me excited again is them drafting a guy like Pollard, them talking about Jahmyz Oluwole the way they have, them bringing back Tavon Austin with the idea that he's going to have a role, and then the kind of combining nature of Moore's comments, mm-hmm. right? The thing that's the connective tissue and all this, like, yes, we are looking to be more multiple. We are looking to use these guys in a variety of ways. I think that's having a versatile roster. You know, those are the kind of things that you like hearing, and that's why, you know, this is why you let go of a Cole Beasley and you pick up a Randall Cobb, is because now you've got more guys who can do more things, and that makes your offense a lot less predictable than it has been. Moving on, along the lines of the running back position, then, you know, they also got, since he was in the same position, we should talk about Mike mm-hmm. Weber. I think I liked this move a lot at the time because I felt like we weren't sure exactly what Pollard was going to provide for us. We don't really have anything in the way of running backs on the team at this point. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, there's Jordan Chun's on the team, but it sounds like Jordan Chun came in.
Yeah, which is like the worst thing you can do in his position.
It's kind of funny. I mean, how do you even, how do you do that? Like can't do that. And then Darius Jackson, who I think we've kind of got an idea who Darius Jackson is. So, but I'm sure there's still going to be people out there screaming for him. They still exist. But Weber, like, going back to it, like, this is a guy who I think that they had rated a lot higher on his board than where they picked him in the seventh round. I don't know that I believe that they've had him ranked as the third round.
That's what they said on, I think it was the Cowboys break last week.
Wow. Well, listen, here's what how they view him. They look at him as like a 75% Zeke, right? So I think the idea is that if Zeke's healthy, Pollard's getting a lot more touches than Weber. A lot more. If Zeke is hurt, I think Weber and Pollard probably get about the same amount of touches. Right?
I think you're right.
That's how I view his role, is that he is the
backup,
true backup. Yeah. Backup running primary back. Backup. Yeah. Yeah, the primary backup. And Pollard is
the compliment,
constant change of pace guy. So what I like about this is that one of the things that values the one of the things that gives you value with Zeke is stability. Mm-hmm. You know, like reliability with Zeke is, you know, it's elite reliability, which is I think something that I don't think people get. But like, I mean, Zeke is insanely consistent, and it's a very stabilizing force on this offense. It's a baseline at the very mm-hmm. least, right? And I think that what happens is if you, with Pollard being your only backup, I think there would be obviously a lot more variance mm-hmm. there because it's a change in the playing style, you know, and how that affects the sequencing of the running game and the timing of the running game. I think that, you know, he obviously has talents, but it would change things up a lot. By getting a guy like Weber, I think you get another guy who, like I said, it's like a 75% Zeke. He's a very similar mm-hmm. back. He sees things similarly. He runs similarly, just not with the same athleticism, not with the same vision, not with the same you know, things that make Zeke. I think it just is kind of, again, a stabilizing force in your backfield, knowing that you're going to get solid production out of the position, with Pollard being the injection of variance, the injection of threat, the injection of you know, potential upside, that sort of thing, and I think that is a good solution for if you were to have Zeke miss time or if something were to happen to him.
Yeah, totally agree. I think he's somebody who prior to the draft I thought he was okay. He was an okay. I gave him I think a early or late fifth round grade, I think, off the top of my head. And getting him in the seventh round, I think that's a good value. I think he provides a really good backup. He's really solid everywhere. He's not really great anywhere, but he's not terrible anywhere. He's a likable kid. He can provide you a reliable receiver out of the backfield. He's not going to run you a ton of routes, but as an outlet receiver against the blitz or something in the flats, he can do that. In pass protection, I thought he was likable. He was good. He has good vision. He has impressive burst. He doesn't really have great flexibility in his hips and ankles, but he has quick enough feet to make people miss in the hole if need be. He's not going to string together moves, but he shows good contact balance. He runs with a low pad level. Just a lot of likable things. And I think if Ezekiel Elliott were to go down, you could do a lot worse than Mike Weber as your backup.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, again, he provides a floor if Zeke mm-hmm. is gone, which is nice. And to get that in the seventh round, I mean, you know, third round, fifth round, you know, a lot of us are grading stuff based on positional value of running backs as well. So a lot of it's kind of pick your poison. I like him as a guy who is a high floor, low ceiling running back. You know, I think he's going to come in and he's going to get what's blocked for you and he probably won't make huge mistakes. So that's a nice thing to have. Especially again, when you get a guy like Pollard as the alternate, that's a good combination for getting the regular production you need at the moments you need it in the running game, but also having the upside of splash plays with Pollard. So let's talk about the two undrafted. Yeah, you know, we got there's a whole bunch of these undrafted offensive linemen, Mitch Hyatt, and who's the kid from Indiana? Brandon Knight. Let's just talk about those guys real quick because I really want to get into Johnson and Guyton. I think Knight is probably a little bit better than Hyatt, despite all the talk about Hyatt. I think, you know, Hyatt has an incredible resume, but just watching him is, you know, it's a lot clearer that, you know, he's got a lot of work to do, I feel, which is surprising, just, you know, considering where he came from. So I think that to me, you know, it was pretty amazing to get these kind of guys to come and be undrafted free agents with how deep the roster is. But, you know, the more I thought about it, the more I realized, look, these guys come in, if they're not getting drafted anyways, they're going to come in and they're going to learn from really good players. And these are, you know, if you're a team that needs offensive line, the Cowboys are on the top of that list of teams that you're going to go watch tape of to look to see what extras they have to see if you can fill your team with them. So it's a good stage for these guys to get tryouts. You know, I think Brandon Knight is going to be a little bit better immediately just because I think his physical skill set is and his technique is going to translate mm-hmm. better. I have strong belief in Hyatt, though. I think that Hyatt, if he could find a way to stick around on a practice squad potentially, if he can, he needs to kind of rework some technique because he is just too much of a waistbender. His feet stop on contact. Like, I just think that he's got some. I think he's got all the tools. I also think that he is one of those guys who has the work ethic and the mentality to do what it takes to get great. But I think he's got a lot more work to do than I think people realize, and a lot more work to do than you would imagine a four-year starter at Clemson, that, you know, a two-time national champion and the captain of that team, would have coming into the NFL. I think that's what's surprising about him. And because of that, I think teams shied away because they're like, well, I mean, this guy went to Clemson for 4 years. He hasn't developed at all. He has, you know, he's got all this work. I don't think that that necessarily means that this guy was not coachable. I just think it might more mean that he didn't get great technique coaching, or they just worked with what he had, and now he's doing this professionally. We've got the time to rework his feet, his hips.
Yeah, I wanted to a little bit more about Brandon Knight. I was really excited watching it. If anybody wants to get excited about what Brandon Knight can potentially become, watch him versus Ohio State. He performed really well against guys like Chase Young, Draymond Jones on the edge. He really held his own. Really good feet. I feel like he's got really good athleticism in his pass sets. He's really good with his vertical pass sets. His hands need a little bit of work. He has the lateral agility to mirror inside moves. I'm kind of excited to see what Brandon Knight can do over the OTAs, mini camp, training camp, and the preseason. Like you said, I wouldn't be surprised if Knight beat out Hyatt and got that kind of late, that last offensive lineman spot on the roster to be kind of a developmental guy for Mark Colombo.
Yeah, for sure. And then the last two guys I want to mention, I think we should each kind of give our report, because I think you've watched Johnson more than I have, and I've watched Guyton more than you have, right? So why don't you give us your impressions on Jonvea Johnson, the wide receiver from Toledo?
Yeah, this was a guy I was really a fan of. I gave him an early fifth-round grade prior to the draft. I was really a fan. I think he needs to develop his ability to beat press like most diminutive wide receivers in college do, but he has the lateral quickness and the vertical explosiveness to really separate from tight coverage on the outside. I really like his ability to stretch the defense vertically. He's really adept at running go routes, posts, corners. I think he was ninth nationally in yards per reception. And yeah, I'm just really excited about his ability to vertically stretch the offense, which I think is kind of similar to what Guyton does. So I'm excited to see how these two can compete against each other.
Guyton, to me, and if you listen to the Locked On Cowboys podcast, you've heard me talk about him before. I'm excited. Guyton's my pet cat, I think, this year. You know, you watch a lot of these guys come in, and it's usually one of two things with these wide receiver, undrafted free agent wide receivers, right? It's guys who are the athletic freaks who are trying to learn how to play wide receiver still, or it's the guys who were, you know, 4 year starters at Northeastern Georgia State, where they're the all time leading receiver and they're incredible technicians. But they ran like a 4.6 40, and they're like 5'11". Mm-hmm. You know, it's like they're technicians, but they're having to overcome their deficiencies as athletes in the NFL. Guyton is not really either of those two guys. Guyton is a guy who has such natural athleticism for the position that's why he was a four-star athlete coming out of high school. Is he played wide receiver in high school. I mean, and just to give some background, he was Kyler Murray's target in high school at Allen High School. They won, like, I think, three back-to-back state titles in 6A Texas high school football. That's serious football. Like, you know, as far as high school football goes, like, that's very high-level football. And then, you know, he's a four-star athlete, comes and goes to Notre Dame. I'm still not sure what happened at Notre Dame. And I don't know if I've dug around. I couldn't find anything. But something happened. He got dismissed for violating team rules, takes some time off, goes to North Texas, finishes up. You know, there isn't, like, a lot of tape of this guy. I mean, there's just a couple games from UNT. But if you watch the guy – he's not, it's, he's very comfortable playing wide receiver. It's not like he, this is a guy who is an athlete who, it's not like watching Emmanuel Hall at times where it looks like a track guy playing wide receiver. This guy is a wide receiver. He clearly knows, he understands on a deep level what the position is doing, mm-hmm. what his job is. I think where he's deficient is that he doesn't have a lot of tape against high-level competition. He doesn't have a lot of tape, period. And on top of that, I think he has a lot of technique work that he has to do, which, you know, is a lot of team players do. But the difference is that a lot of those players have a ton of tape playing at Georgia or at, you know, wherever they're from, Clemson, you know, against elite talent. This guy, you know, unfortunately doesn't have any of that. It is more of a gamble. But look, this is an elite athlete at the position. And on top of that is a guy who is not a new convert to playing wide receiver. This guy has done it at a high level in high school, was ready to do it at a high level in college before some stuff that happened that had nothing to do with his on-the-field performance, and is looking for kind of a fresh start. But if you listen to the guy talk to, he sounds driven and motivated, and he understands what he has to do, and he understands what it takes. This guy on the field is a speed athlete, a down the field receiver. He's like John Vea Johnson, I think, in some ways, except he's about 15 pounds heavier and about 3 inches taller. So that's my report on Guyton. I think if the Cowboys can find a way to develop, and I believe in Sanjay Lal, I think that the Cowboys may have really gotten a steal with this guy.
Yeah, he sounds exciting.
So I think that's it for us. I think we covered the guys we wanted to talk about. Yeah. Anything else overall on your thoughts on the these acquisitions and the offense as a whole?
No, not really. I'm just really excited to see what Tony Pollard, the way he is used by the offense. I think the way he's used is going to show us a lot of how this Cowboys offense is going to be utilized throughout the season. So just really looking forward to seeing more of that and hearing more nuggets come out of OTAs and the minicamp coming up.
I agree. All right, guys, that's it for us. Make sure you follow us on Twitter. I'm at McCoolBCB. He's at John Oning. And our account for the pod is at Best Coast Boys, the Z at the end. Special thanks, as always, to our pod father, Mike Fisher. Make sure you follow him at Fish Sports and catch us all on Cowboys247. That's 247sports.com/NFL/Dallas-Cowboys. And catch us on the Anchor app and all the other great podcast apps. If you're having issues, please hit me up on Twitter. Maybe I can see, work it out, send you a link or whatever. But make sure you rate and review us. Leave 5 stars. Don't be a hater. And until next week, happy trails, everybody. Yeah.